Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome in to Outkick the Show. I'm your fearless leader, Clay Travis. I hope all of you are having phenomenal, fantastic, incredible Thursdays as we get ready for the State of the Union Address and as we get ready to head in to the final weekend of college basketball as we get ready as well for all the conference tournaments in the major conferences. I know the smaller conferences are competing right now. We got a lot to dive into. State of the Union, what do we expect to see tonight? Joe Scarborough with an unbelievable endorsement of Joe Biden, the likes of which I find it hard to believe ever exist. Jake Paul, Mike Tyson fighting. New Jersey high school controversy grows on that state championship pursuit. We will talk about that. And University of Tennessee wins the SEC outright with a road win at South Carolina and now is elevated as the fourth number one seed. What do we expect there? Break it all down for you. But I want to start, by the way, also all three picks that I gave out to you yesterday, I told you I loved them. All three of them hit on Prize Picks. Dalton Knecht, more than 21.5 points. Jonas Adu, more than 11.5 points. And Zakai Ziegler, more than 21.5 points, rebounds, assists combined. I told you that I loved it as a Prize Picks pick, and it hit. So hopefully we can keep that mojo rolling into next week as we'll have more college basketball going. But I want to start with the unfortunate reality that Joe Biden has put in place is that unless he trips and falls walking in the House of Representatives, unless he manages to freeze for multiple minutes staring into the teleprompter, it's such a low bar that Joe Biden has to clear that I think the storyline that's going to come out of the State of the Union is Joe Biden was able to stand there and read off a teleprompter for 45 minutes. You're going to hear all of the usual lunatics at MSNBC and CNN claim that somehow this is a validation of Joe Biden's mental and physical fitness. The reality, though, is Trump has said he will debate Joe Biden anytime, any place, anywhere. Joe Biden has not yet responded. We're 8 months out. There's a possibility that if they actually run Joe Biden, which I still question whether they're going to do, that Biden only had, think about how crazy this is, that Joe Biden would only have to speak for 45 minutes or an hour in a row time at the State of the Union address tonight, and maybe when he accepts the nomination in Chicago at the Democrat National Convention. Otherwise, it's possible that they don't have any live addresses for Joe Biden to actually do for the rest of the campaign. This is unlike anything we've ever seen. They hid Biden in 2020, but not like this. And he wasn't the president then. He was running for president of the United States. And they hid him in his basement, and they could at least use COVID as an excuse for why they were hiding him in his basement, not requiring him to go around and do all these public events. Now they're going to hide him. It's what I refer to as the Weekend at Bernie's 2 campaign. They already won Weekend at Bernie's 1. But can you believe that this is the world into which we have entered, where they're legitimately trying to keep you and me and everybody out there from actually hearing anything from Joe Biden as a part of the State of the Union? I can't believe that this is where we are right now. Nor can I believe that Joe Scarborough, who I think even for Joe Biden shills, even Joe Biden propagandists look at Joe Scarborough on MSNBC and they say, boy, he's a cheap hooker. Like, even them, they look at it and they're like, this dude is not even a high-end propaganda expert. Not even a high-end hooker. He is a streetwalker. He came out and said, Joe Biden has got better mental faculties than at any point in his career. I'm paraphrasing. And he said, F you, for anybody out there that doesn't want to hear this. This is a lie that even, remember the Baghdad Ministry of Information guy back in the day who was standing out in the street saying, I don't know why you say the Americans are here. They're not here. And they're like driving by and waving at him on live television. Even the Iraqi Minister of Information who lied about Americans in Iraq back in the day, even he is seeing what Joe Scarborough is saying about Joe Biden. He's like, man, that guy's a little bit out of touch with reality. That guy is propagandizing a bit too aggressively. Even I can't manage to defend this. 81, soon to be 82-year-old Joe Biden is at the peak of his political performance. And F you, said Joe Scarborough, if you don't agree. Joe Scarborough, I'm going down tomorrow. I'm going down to what I think is one of the most beautiful places in the contiguous 48 states. Tomorrow, I'm going to finish Clay and Buck, and I'm hopping in my car, and I'm driving down to the Florida Gulf Coast to 30A between Destin, Florida, and Panama City Beach. I think one of the most beautiful postage stamps of America. I love it there. I'm going to be down there all next week. My kids are on spring break. Joe Scarborough used to represent that area of the country as a Republican congressman. And now he goes on MSNBC and he just proves that he doesn't have a gag reflex every single day when it comes to telling you that Joe Biden is heroic and incredibly talented and that it's shameful that anybody could possibly consider Joe Biden to be not at the absolute apex of his mental and physical capacity as president of the United States. This is a lie. All of you know this is a lie. And, you know, I might pick on Karine Jean-Pierre, but she's the White House spokesperson. It is her responsibility to try to put the best spin as possible. Jen Psaki back in the day had to do it. The goal is to try to spin for the Biden administration the media to the best of your ability. That's legitimately the job. You are paid by the president to try to make him look as good as possible. Joe Scarborough is supposed to be independent. He's supposed to be an opinionist, like I am, doing his best to be honest with his audience every single day. This is humiliating. This is embarrassing. Joe Scarborough has turned his back on everybody that lives on the Florida Gulf Coast that he used to represent, and he is now the liar-in-chief of all left-wing media. What a shameful position to find yourself in. You could argue that you think Trump is such a threat to democracy that even if Joe Biden doesn't have the mental and physical capacity that he once did to govern effectively, that you still think a diminished Joe Biden is better than Donald Trump. I disagree with that perspective, but you could argue that. That's not an outlandish and unreasonable opinion to share publicly if you are in the opinion business. But to argue that all of you who see Joe Biden drastically diminished, who see a guy that thanks people who have been dead for years, who has regular senior moments where it's quite clear that he has no idea how to get off the stage, who can't really walk and nearly falls all the time, who can no longer even climb the actual stairs for Air Force One, so they have to let him go up the baby stairs, and he still trips there, who legitimately fell over onto the ground at the Air Force Academy. And honestly, if they're being truthful with you, every Democrat in the Biden administration has their fingers crossed right now in hopes that he's not going to have a catastrophic mental or physical failure on the national stage tonight for the State of the Union. The idea that you would argue Joe Biden is at the peak of his abilities is such a transparent lie that even in the metaphorical hooker community, streetwalkers would be looking at Joe Scarborough askance and saying, you're cheapening our profession with your behavior. That is where Joe Scarborough is. And by the way, I will debate Joe Scarborough anytime, any place, anywhere, and I will stuff him in a locker. And I will do it on behalf of the people that used to be his constituents in the great panhandle of Florida. And I will do it on behalf of everyone with a functional brain who has to listen to his lies all the time. Anytime, any place, anywhere, little man, I will put you in a locker and you'll be done for. My challenge to streetwalker Joe Scarborough, who's even embarrassing the streetwalker community on a metaphorical basis. Did you see this story? Jake Paul's fighting Mike Tyson. I gotta admit, the minute I saw it come across my timeline, I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to watch. Jake Paul's in his 20s. Mike Tyson's going to be 58 by the time the fight happens. But Mike Tyson is still the most captivating boxer of the last two generations. He is. All of you who are around my age, grew up in the 80s, the 90s, you care about Mike Tyson more than you do any heavyweight fighter right now. I don't even know. Who's the best American heavyweight boxer right now? I'm not even sure right now who the best is. I don't even know is there an undisputed heavyweight champion right now? I know Tyson, what's the guy's name? Tyson Gay. I can't even remember his name. The big, bald, British dude. I think he was British. I can't even remember. The sport of boxing from a heavyweight perspective has never been as strong as it was when Mike Tyson mattered, when Evander Holyfield mattered. Heck, when Mike Tyson bit Evander Holyfield's ear off. Jake Paul has created this prime drink. I don't know if you have kids. I've got three. This prime drink that Jake Paul created, this energy drink, it's a multi-billion dollar brand now. Every kid in America, if you got kids around my age, they all drink it. They all knew about it. He's a YouTube sensation, and he has built a monster audience. And I think this is a killer app for Netflix. Live sports, even if it's kind of an exhibition, even if Mike Tyson's 58, July 20th on Netflix, I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch because I've seen the videos of Mike Tyson training. He's still super ripped. Even at 57, 58 years old, Mike Tyson is still a bad man. I think there's probably a decent chance he could knock out Jake Paul, even though Jake Paul is 30 years younger than him and I believe has an undefeated boxing record nearly right now. Just crazy to think about how well this guy has done building a monster audience. And now this is the next step. I'm going to watch it. I want to play this clip for you. I'm not sure how many of you saw this, but this is from New Jersey, the Final Four of the state championship. A team is down. They have possession of the ball with about 5 seconds left. They go down, miss a shot, get a rebound. You can watch it here. Clearly score. It's counted as a basket. Then all the officials, all three of them, gather around. They debate it. They take the basket off. And as a result, the team that actually lost won. And they are now scheduled to advance and play for the state title Saturday at noon Eastern in New Jersey. Let's watch that clip if we could. Guys, can we play it? Okay, you can see the result there. The shot's clearly off in time. You can Google that. You can look it up yourself. There's no debate, no uncertainty about whether or not the shot got off in time. You can even tell, if you're an official, a little bit. You could watch the reaction of the other team, which clearly knows that shot was taken in time because they saw that they lost. If you were on the court, they immediately sunk their heads and began to behave in a dejected fashion. Now,
you ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I asked the question, And I think it's a really interesting question. This is a great sports talk radio topic. I said, what would you do if you were the head coach of this Camden, New Jersey area team and you knew that you had lost in this scenario? In what way would you respond? And over 16,000 of you have voted so far. Here's the poll question that I asked. I said, if you're the Camden, New Jersey head coach, your team clearly lost. Video makes it 100% clear. We just showed you that video. On a last second shot, but refs incorrectly ruled the shot was late. Would you advance and play or forfeit and withdraw and let the other team that actually won advance? Pretty even result here. 55% of you said you would forfeit and withdraw if you were the head coach. 45% of you said you would advance and play. To me, if I were the Camden basketball coach, and it's easy to say if you're not actually the coach because you don't have the stakes at to make the choice, I think forfeiting and letting the other team advance is the right call. And look, most of the time, nobody has any idea who wins any particular state basketball championship. I was in high school. Martin Luther King Magnet, we won the 1996 state basketball championship in AA in Nashville, Tennessee. We were a Nashville, Tennessee team, state of Tennessee champion, AA. This was before, by the way, now they have like all the private school champs and everything else. My school won AA state championship in basketball. It was a big deal. Next year, went to the state championship, lost in the state championship, making it to state was a huge deal. I think 8 teams back in the day made it to state. There was a single A, there was a double A, there was a triple A, depending on the size of your school, and you crowned only 3 boys champs statewide. Some states have even fewer. Now Tennessee has a scholarship division, private school division. I think there's like 10 state champions now in boys basketball. I don't know how many New Jersey has. Point is, unless you're directly involved, most people don't know who ends up winning a state championship. It's a big deal. It's an incredible accomplishment. But outside of your local circle, most people are not aware of who ends up winning a championship. Because this story has gone viral, if Camden High School's coach said, we're going to withdraw forfeit and the team that actually won is going to advance, if he did that, 100 million people might become aware of it. It is a story that would cut directly to why sports exists, especially amateur sports. Most of us do not play high school athletics because we're going to have a high-end college or professional career. Most of us do not have our kids play sports because we are expecting them to be professionals or college scholarship earners. We do it to send a message about growth as a human. I have coached basketball, baseball, soccer games as a dad. The goal of my kids playing sports is not for them to become elite Olympic athletes or first-round picks. I knew quite early that that was unlikely to happen. Heck, I knew when I had kids that was unlikely to happen because my athletic exploits are not legion, not particularly impressive at all, okay? But we have kids play sports to learn important life lessons. I think this Camden High School coach has an incredible opportunity to send a great message about sports and why we play. I also think his team would be far more praised for dropping out than they ever would have been for actually winning the title. And I think the kids on the team would learn a more important life lesson. I understand some of you out there say, well, there's no way, by the way, the New Jersey High School Athletic Association, as I am talking to you on Thursday afternoon, has said we can't change the outcome even though it was 100% wrong because we don't have an instant replay process in place. Now, they have gone back and changed other outcomes that have been incorrect. So that precedent appears to be somewhat inconsistent based on what I have read. Some of you say, well, they missed a holding call, or man, that person, there was a lane violation, or there should have been a foul called there, or whatever sport you want to point to. Officiating is imperfect. You've got to deal with it. I understand that argument. But here we have a non-judgment call. Judgment call is, hey, was there holding or not? Did that person potentially line up offsides or not? Was there a false start? Was that a travel? Did somebody change their pivot foot? Should there have been a foul called? Was somebody in the lane for 3 seconds or not? Those are all judgment calls in officiating and in athletics. Was that a ball or strike? Whether a shot gets off in time is not a judgment call. There is a right or wrong choice that is made. Here, you 100% know the wrong choice was made, and as a result, the team that did not actually win on the court is advancing to play for a state title, and the team that actually won is having their season end. I believe you should endeavor to get this right, and you should change the outcome that was clearly wrong. And by the way, if you saw that video, the officials initially counted the basket and then went back and took it away. So after the game, they actually changed the call that was initially correct. The ref supervisor called everybody together and said, hey, I think it was late. And the right call, which was made by the official in the best possible space to see whether or not the shot was in time, was actually invalidated after the game was over. So to me, that seems like kind of an interesting dichotomy. They made the right call, then after the game, they reversed it. We'll see what happens with the legal process, but I don't think the onus should be on the team that didn't do anything wrong to rectify what was a clear wrong that they were victimized by. Camden could do the right thing here. The coach or principal of Camden High School could make the decision that his team clearly lost and does not deserve to advance. That's what I think should actually end up happening. Tennessee won the Southeastern Conference last night against South Carolina. In the process, Tennessee has gone on the road, beat Auburn, and then gone at home, then went on the road, won at Alabama, won at South Carolina. Alabama had not lost an SEC game all season at home. I think South Carolina had lost one SEC game, if I'm not mistaken, at home. Both of them had tremendous home court advantages, and both of them were playing to attempt to win their own SEC title. Instead, Tennessee won and now sits at, I believe, 14-3, wins the SEC outright. They now have advanced in virtually all of the brackets after three straight top 25 wins, two of them on the road, as the fourth number one seed. In no particular order, Houston, Purdue, UConn, and Tennessee are your four number one seeds in almost all brackets out there. Rick Barnes, incredible victory here. Dalton Connect, phenomenal player. As I mentioned, the three picks that I gave out on Prize Picks all cashed. I've been watching Tennessee basketball my whole life. I was at the very first game that was ever played in Thompson Bowling Arena. Saturday, we'll get the Kentucky Wildcats will roll into town to take on Tennessee. Tennessee, by the way, I believe the math is, now has the second most SEC men's basketball titles of all time. Vols have 12. Kentucky has like 40-something. But incredible year for Rick Barnes. Now the question becomes, can he lead a team back to the Final Four? It's been 20-some-odd years since he took Texas. So far, Rick Barnes, I think 27-26 all-time in the NCAA tournament. He hasn't been able to have the same level of NCAA tournament success that he has in the regular season, so we'll see whether or not that ends up being able to be the next step. But there was some controversy. I saw Trey Wallace wrote about this at OutKick, and Andrew Perloff came out and said, why are they celebrating like this? Because several players said that they were going to get SEC championship rings, and that was the way they celebrated. Well, first of all, most teams, if they win an SEC championship or an ACC championship or a Big Ten or a Big 12 or any conference, they cut down the net. Now, Tennessee won it at home, but I would bet if Tennessee beats Kentucky on senior day, there's a very good chance that they'll cut the net down. And if you win the SEC basketball tournament or your conference's basketball tournament, you typically cut the nets down. And if you advance to the Final Four and win your region, you typically cut the nets down. I like Andrew Perloff. He was on with Dan Patrick for a long time. I've met him a lot. What a strange thing to complain about. You don't like the fact that a conference title is being celebrated? It's hard to win an outright conference title in any basketball conference in America. Tennessee had to go, 14-3 so far? It's hard to go 14. It's way harder to win a regular season conference title. You have to win a lot more games than to get hot in a postseason basketball tournament and win your conference tournament. Now, the conference tournament is exciting, but it's often the case that the best team doesn't end up winning there because, unlike the sample size of 17 or 18 conference games, you might have a sample size of only 3 or 4 in a conference tournament. So I thought this was a strange thing. Winning a conference and getting a ring is a big deal. Tennessee should be commended for it. Now we'll see whether or not they can take that next step in March Madness and advance to the Elite Eight or the Final Four and become the first ever number one seed. But saying, hey, we're going to get conference championship rings, what in the world are you thinking? Why would you celebrate like this? I thought it was a strange take by Andrew Perloff. And you can go read about it at Outkick. Trey Wallace has written about it. Finally, some of you who are old school Outkick people will recall me doing daily shows during the summer of 2020 when all the BLM riots were going on, when all the chaos was occurring. And you'll remember that I endorsed Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton's idea in the wake of what happened in my home city of Nashville, where they tried to burn down the courthouse, where they were throwing Molotov cocktails in the windows. I said, I want all of these guys prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Where are the police officers? Call out the National Guard if it's necessary. Stop violent rioting and plundering and looting from occurring all over the country. So I agreed with Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton's editorial when he put it out there in the New York Times editorial page. But what's interesting about this is a lot of people didn't. In fact, a lot of people out there lost their minds over the way that this went down, including Mara Gay, who is a New York Times editorial board member. And they did a great job pulling her two divergent opinions. This is from Aaron Sabirium. He was the one who shared this first. Mara Gay wrote, when Tom Cotton said, send in the troops, this was his opinion, the nation must restore order, the military stands ready. That happened in June of 2020. Mara Gay said, running this puts black people in danger and other Americans standing up for our humanity and democracy too at New York Times. They actually fired the head of the New York Times editorial page for publishing this opinion by a sitting senator in the United States. It is his opinion. It is not the New York Times opinion. But now that Kathy Hochul has called out the National Guard to help make the New York City subway safer, the exact same person 4 years later wrote as follows, the National Guard might help subway riders feel safer. I'm reading. New York City cannot function without a thriving subway, and ensuring that the system not only is safe, but feels safe is paramount. So Governor Kathy Hochul's decision to deploy 750 National Guard members and 250 New York State police officers to the subways after a spate of attacks is the right one. So wait a minute. 4 years ago, helping to make sure that cities were safe with the National Guard, unacceptable. By the way, New York Times immediately wanted the National Guard called in after Jan 6th. So they've been inconsistent for a while. But Mara Gay, who was paid six figures by the New York Times to be an esteemed member of their editorial board, now says calling in the National Guard to make everybody safer in an issue of rampant crime is totally acceptable. This is what hypocrisy is. And you guys can call me out on disagreeing with my opinions left and right. I love the marketplace of ideas. First Amendment's free and well. Not very much hypocrisy. If you go through my whole career, I pretty much have always said the same thing on issues like these. If you violate the law, you should be, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, when it comes to protesting, you should be punished to the full extent of the law. When it comes to violent protesting, right? Talking about something where you are actually violating the law. You're looting, you're trespassing, any of those situations. You go back and look. I said on Jan 6th that I believed the Jan 6th protesters should be prosecuted. But I also demanded that everybody burning down police stations and everybody rioting and looting during the BLM summer of 2020, that they all deserved the same style punishment. Treat everybody the same regardless of their politics. Mara Gay and the New York Times don't do that. And that's why I think the New York Times' legitimacy as a true news organization has collapsed. They're a fan site for left-wing politics. That's fine. But don't pretend that your goal is to do all the news that's fit to print anymore. Your new mindset, your guiding tenet is all the news that's fit to print that our subscribers want to read. And that's a very different business mantra than the one that they had that existed for most of my life. And I just think the Mara Gay hypocrisy is a perfect distillation of exactly what's happened over the last 4 years. They fired the editorial page boss for sharing an opinion they didn't like and claimed it was racist. And now that Kathy Hochul is doing the same thing, they now say it's good. By the way, Mara Gay, same person who said that instead of spending $1 billion on his political campaign, I think it was Mayor Bloomberg should have given everybody in the United States $1 million. Like, doesn't understand basic math, not good. Also said that when she went to Long Island, she was very uncomfortable because there were too many American flags and that triggered her. This is not one of the great intellectual heavyweights of our time, but you would at least hope that the New York Times itself could remain somewhat consistent when it comes to principle. They can't. They've fallen completely apart. All right. I love all of you. Not scheduled to have any more Outkick the Shows. If something crazy happens at the State of the Union beyond what we would anticipate, maybe I would do a show in the morning tomorrow. No shows all next week. But right now my plan is not, because I got to get in my car and head to the beach. I will be doing Clay and Buck all week, but I will be down in the panhandle in a God's country on the beach in Florida for the next week. Again, I'll be doing radio, but not Outkick shows. Love all of you. DBAP unless you need to SBAP. I'm Clay Travis, and this has been Outkick the Show.